they better take me home tonight. All right, it was probably destined for divorce.
And that's our cold open. Welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. Thank you so much for listening in. If you like what we do, it would mean a lot to us if you would leave us a rating or a review on iTunes. It would really help with visibility. Share this with your friends, your coworkers, your loved ones, maybe somebody you hate, just anybody that would possibly be interested. You see somebody walking down the street in a Star Wars t-shirt or a Game of Thrones t-shirt, say, hey, listen to this podcast. They're nerds. You're a nerd. You should all get together. Do that.
Or some Star Wars, Sperry's, huh?
Star Wars Sperry's. I'm in. Guys, Star Wars Sperry's. Somebody send us. twowokenerdspod@gmail.com. Reach out to us. Let us know. Sperry's, sponsor the show. Now, so this week we've got a lot going on. Really, we've got two big subjects that we're probably going to hammer home really quickly. But guys, we are going to jump in. And I'm joined, you already heard his voice, like I am every week, by my good friend, my very own Vanilla Bear, a man who has never been called too dark and unnerving. Raymond Summerlin. Ray, how you doing, bud?
I actually think I probably have been called at least unnerving. Unnerving, sure, is certainly on the board.
Yeah.
I don't know if too dark has ever been. But Justice League. It's going well.
Justice League feels like that when you go and you're trying to purchase a house. And the inspection, like, you see it, like, oh, it's got some things I need to do. I need to paint here. I need to, you know, change these light fixtures. Get rid of the popcorn ceiling. Normal stuff. And then the inspection happens, like, nope.
Yeah.
Foundation's cracked, and there's termites here.
Yeah.
That's what this is starting to feel like.
The poltergeist lives there. Like, yeah. Just all sorts of crazy things. You know what's funny is I saw the trailer before the movie I watched today. And it looked fine. I mean, it looks fine. It looks like a fine trailer, so... I don't know if this trailer is post them figuring out they had problems or what's going on, but yeah, man, it doesn't seem like things are going well. But again, we'll see, right?
We will see.
We'll see. They got some time.
Yeah, they're trudging along. They haven't moved the release date yet, so they're confident, I think, that Joss can get it done, which is good that the studio's confident in the director finally. So it's a good thing. But again, if they're lightening it up, the rumor is that the ending initially was they beat Steppenwolf and then out through some sort of portal, Darkseid comes, which is a terrible ending. So.
Yeah. Isn't that exactly the ending that I said?
It is 100%.
Just hire me as a writer. I'll write up some terrible. I can write Suicide Squad too.
Electric Boogaloo. All right. So we're going to.
Even more suicide-y than the first.
We'll drop that there. So we're going to jump in. Ray, like we do every week, not as much earth-shattering happened this week, but there were some revelations this week on Game of Thrones.
One or two.
So Ray, catch the folks up on the goings-on in Westeros.
So first of all, there were a lot of reveals, and I want to talk about those later. But I want to hit you with something at the beginning, a criticism of Game of Thrones, which... If you listen to this podcast, you know that I'm in, right? I am in on this show. But I think that the speed of this season, what it's done, and I can get over, I know people talk about the ships moving so fast, you know, basically teleporting and people getting crazy places faster, you know, after Tyrion spent like half a year in a boat, half a season in a boat, like on one season, now we're going at light speed. I'm fine with all that. I've got it. What I actually think that the speed of the show, the speed of the plot development has done is it's forced them to get lazy and it's forced them to fall into TV tropes. And I don't like it. Like it doesn't feel like the TV show that it was before. And there are a lot of examples in this episode. The first, the most egregious perhaps, is Jaime and Bronn ending up coming out of the river out of breath, you know, somehow 500 yards away from where they entered the river, even though one of them is wearing armor, and nobody in Danny's entourage thinks that maybe we should go chase down Jaime Lannister, you know, probably the second most important of our enemies, and maybe we should hold on to them. They go, no, we're going to round up some other folks, and we're gonna, you know, we're gonna burn a couple of them. That's such a ridiculous, convenient. We have to have Jaime get back to Cersei because we have some stuff we want to do. In the previous incarnations of the show, Jaime would get caught, and maybe Tyrion, feeling some loyalty, would release him, and that would lead to a falling out between Dany and Tyrion and so on and so forth. In the old version of the show, that's how that would have gone down, and it would have been good, and we've got good scenes out of it, but they don't have the time to do that anymore. So they have to do some stupid, they floated down the river thing, which is just ridiculous. I mean, there's so many instances this season of character A almost telling character B some piece of information that would completely change everything. If the maester would have told Sam about his parents, if Sam would have let Gilly continue to read, if Bran would just tell Jon what he knows. There's so much of that, and they're not telling because that ruins the story, and if it ruins the story, they can't kind of bleed this out. And the last thing, just like, how many stupid speeches have we heard that somehow change and fix everything, right? This episode, we have John giving a speech around the painted table, and all of a sudden, Dany, who wasn't listening to anybody, is super excited to let both John and Jorah, who she's randomly in a love triangle with now, which I especially don't like because she is the mother of dragons. She shouldn't be woefully watching men leave on a boat as if the only thing that matters to her is leaving. That's ridiculous and not what this show's about, but that's for another story. But she just suddenly accepts it and says, oh, this guy gave me a speech. And it's happened. She's given speeches and John's given speeches. And it's happened in like every episode. All of a sudden, it suddenly solves everything. Like an episode of Full House. I don't know. All of that stuff, all of that TV stuff is driving me crazy. And it's not what this show was. So am I needlessly upset about this? Or is this actually happening?
I think that was a lot of people's fears going into the season was that, you know, the last six seasons were so carefully plotted. They were so meticulously crafted. You know, people did complain you were generally a filler episode or something that felt like a filler episode at the time. And now they're having to move at a speed that they've basically speed and a half, because they dropped from 12 to 7 episodes. So they've got to move faster than they ever have before. And so at some point, I do think that you know, you have the TV show that goes on too long and starts to kind of forget what made it good. And I don't think that's going to happen simply because they have a hard out. But I do think that, you know, that is pretty contrived. Because I think after last week, I think it would have been a good way for Bronn to go out. Like, it would have been a great way for that character to go out. You know, Jamie's story doesn't end there. But I definitely think Bronn's story could have ended there very, very well. And so, yeah, I do think they're finding weird ways to keep the plot moving, which shouldn't be a problem when you have fewer episodes. It should be easier. You shouldn't have to do that when you have, you know, 7 fewer episodes to play with.
Yeah, like it feels like they're stretching out this John thing,
yeah,
right, to the point of absurdity at this point. Like, that dragon scene was cool. It's cool because we know, as the viewers, they don't know, although Dany might have inclination now, right? But we know as the viewers that he is the son of Rhaegar. And so we know why the dragon is, you know, why the dragon is allowing him to touch him and be that close. We got that. We know that. And it was cool to see. But even that scene itself was contrived in TV, right? Even that scene itself, John just happens to be on this outcrop when Dany's flying up, because apparently she, I don't know, let the air traffic control tower know that she was coming. And so suddenly he's out there on that outcrop. She shows up, lands right next to him, so this could happen, just watches this go down without getting off, and we see this happen. And then, oh, by the way, suddenly Jorah shows up, right? And Jorah looks at John, he says, I serve with your dad, and Jorah doesn't look at John and go, hey, you have my sword, right? Like, what is happening? Like, it's so confusing. And it's so TV, and it's like what I talked about last week on the battle. It's so much smaller than what this show used to be. And that is, you know, that's upsetting to me. It really is. It's not what the show was, and hopefully it pays off. This next episode could be epic, right? And so hopefully it pays off, and this is just one of those episodes that we, you know, that we forget. But I am not happy with where this show has gone. I like the dragon and John scene. I like that they're north of the wall, but you having it rushed, you're rushing it and making it a worse TV show in order to make those things happen, in order to contrive those situations. And I do not like that at all.
Yeah, and you know, I said it before, but I feel like every season there's that one episode that everybody is just like, that episode sucked. Like,
yeah.
There's always that one. It's usually the third to the last episode, because the second to last episode is usually the big, you know, the biggin, whatever it happens to be, Blackwater, you know, Ned Stark gets beheaded, that second to last episode. So I believe this weekend is our second to last episode. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So it is the big episode, yeah.
So
the big
they're going north. They've got the Westeros adventure, you know, Avengers.
The Fellowship of the White?
Yeah.
Can we call it that?
That's good. That's good. I was trying to come up with a Westerosi Avengers thing, but I couldn't come up with it.
The fellowship. It's straight Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, for sure.
It has to be Lord. And Tormund is Gimli.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tormund is, I don't know, it's between him and Davos now that Olenna's dead, but he and Davos are top of the leaderboard in the character. That, did you bring the big woman with you? Dead.
Yeah.
I literally died. That is amazing.
Can we ask, like, why is Pod in that group? That's the one that throws me off.
Pod? No, Gendry.
Yes.
Gendry.
Why is he in that group?
Well, because he's a Baratheon, and he is the, I suppose, last best hope for the Baratheons. And first, I'm fine with it, because a Baratheon is wielding a Warhammer. Yeah. And that is amazing, if you know anything about Robert Baratheon. By the way, fun fact, those guys are sitting there having their talk about their dads, and obviously Gendry knows his dad is Robert Baratheon. Jon thinks his dad is Ned Stark. Oh, our dads were such good friends. Who is Jon's actual dad? Rhaegar Targaryen. What happened to him? How did he die? Oh, that's right. Robert Baratheon put a Warhammer through his chest. A Warhammer similar to the one that Gendry is now swinging. That's a fun one. We had to talk about all the reveals, right? We got to talk about all the reveals. The annulment reveal from Gilly, of all people.
Just casually dropping that.
Of all people. She doesn't even say his name right. Yeah. The marriage happened in Dorne, which is obviously where the Tower of Joy is. This is very, there's no ambiguity here.
Jon is legitimized.
Jon is a legitimate Targaryen.
Yep.
Which means that he has a stronger claim to the throne than Dany, because he is a male.
Which bugs me a little bit, but, you know.
Sure. And I'm hoping that at the end of this, it doesn't play out that way. This is Dany talks about all the time, breaking the wheel, breaking the wheel, breaking the wheel. Hopefully we break the wheel and we kind of get rid of this patriarchal society, but we'll see what happens, right? We have a queen right now, don't we? So there we go, even if she's insane. The other question is, do we ever actually find out? Or is that just for us? Because that could be interesting. Is that just for us? Or is this something that is found out?
If you'd asked me that last season, I would say this is a show that doesn't do anything on accident.
Yeah.
In light of some of the things that happened this year, I don't know. I mean, they don't do the Tower of Joy, and they don't do that reveal, I think, without it adding up to something. I hope they don't do it in a ham-fisted way, which I'm terrified that they're going to. Like, I'm really scared that the last episode, if Jon and Dany make it out, and Dany is about to sit on the throne, and then Bran gets all weird and says, actually, he's the fire out of it. Like, I'm terrified this is going to be some dumb, ham-fisted way to get Jon on the throne.
I'm also terrified it's going to end a lot like Rogue One, like sitting on a beach. I don't know. I'm not feeling that. Do you buy, this is a good question, because this was another big reveal. We got a bunch to go here. Another big reveal. Do you buy that Cersei is pregnant?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I legitimately don't. Like, it would make sense for her to be crazy and it not, like, to be a hysterical pregnancy, but it would also make sense it would be the type of knife twisting that this show would do to say, oh no, she's pregnant, and then it's born and it's a boy, and so, like, oh, there's another one that may have a claim to the throne. Like, that would be just another thing.
But she doesn't have 9 months left.
Yeah, true. She does not.
Nobody in the show has 9 months left.
Very true.
And she is the definition of an abusive spouse.
For sure.
The definition. So she thought she's losing Jamie. How do I get him back? I tell him I'm pregnant. He's all in. I'm going to tell him that you're the father, completely in, give him a hug, and then what does she say to him? Never betray me again. There's no baby in that belly. There is no baby in that belly. I am confident of it. Last thing. First of all, Danny at the beginning of the episode, I haven't come here to murder you, but if you don't kneel, I'm definitely going to murder you. All right, champ.
It's presidential in light of...
Is it possible the moral of the story is, because Danny's going off the reservation, is the moral of the story is that no leader can be a hero? That leaders are not heroes? Is that basically what we're going to take out of this? That every leader, because of what it takes to become a leader, is morally flawed?
That would be very... let's think about the most virtuous leaders that we've had. I mean, Ned Stark loses his head. He's a rather virtuous guy.
Gone.
I mean, they extol his virtues in the first... Like, that's most of his characterization. That's why him having a bastard son is very out of the ordinary. I mean, Rob...
John was literally stabbed in the heart.
Yeah.
Literally stabbed in the heart for doing the right thing.
Rob chose love over politics, and we saw how that played out. So
is the only hero is the reluctant leader? One who even may have a death wish and decides to keep going north of the wall? It's just something interesting to think about, I think.
It is interesting, for sure.
But to moving on. So Sam's leaving the Citadel, right? The Citadel. His dad and brother, he doesn't know this, have been burned alive by Danny, who is aligned somewhat with John, who he has fealty to, essentially, right? He is now the only male left. He does have a sister, but he's now the only male left of House Tarly, which controls the Reach now. But he still has his vows to the Night Watch, but he's kind of basically married to someone, which is against his vows, and has basically disavowed the order of the Lord Commander by leaving the Citadel. Where does that leave us? Is he the head of House Tarly now? If he is, can he align with Danny? If he's not, can they align with Danny? Like, where are we? Like, it's such a weird situation to be in, especially with a character like Sam. I don't know where this is going.
It would be a very interesting resolution to his story for him to be this I don't even know how to describe his initial characterization, just is very weak, very meek, very passive, passive character to end up having to be someone who could be the linchpin to everything that's happening. You know, he's got a lot of clout, and so is he going to make the hard decision? Back to what we just talked about, like, is he going to make the right decision? He's going to make the hard decision, or is he going to try to, like, there's a lot that could be done with Sam. Sam has gone from being a very, very one-note character to being somebody who's so pivotal to the plot that it's just fantastic for me, and I love seeing that actor. What's his name?
I forget. Last thing, and we'll move on to Star Wars. Okay, last thing. First of all, Arya is a sociopath. Is anybody else troubled by this? Other than Sansa, who's clearly troubled by this?
Who else is there to be troubled by it? Because Bran is off in Branland. So,
bro, you just can't even understand. Like, this is just one of many universes. Sorry, that's my Bran voice now. It's so good. Arya's a sociopath.
Yeah.
Right? That's scary.
But she's our sociopath.
So it's okay?
No, not at all.
If you were friends with Ted, I don't know. But second thing, is she underestimating Littlefinger? Or is she playing the game? Did she want him to see her coming out of the room? Or is she underestimating Littlefinger?
I think after everything Arya has been through, there's no way that anything is happening on accident. I mean, after the whole, like, faking blindness, faking being mortally wounded thing, just to trap you in the dark where I can kill you easier, I don't think the Arya that we've come to know over the last several seasons is doing any of this by accident. That's my interpretation. If she is underestimating Littlefinger, I would be upset over the last three seasons of characterization they've given Maisie Williams to do. I don't think they would do that to that character, at least in my estimation.
Yeah, especially since she's a superhero. And I said last thing, two more things. More Varys and Tyrion, please. Always. Put them in the same room and let them talk. Just continue that. Okay, so what does it say? Perfect line. Beautiful line. Last thing, where is Ghost? Why aren't you bringing him north of the wall? Sorry, that's it. All right, gears ground. I'm
budget,
done.
Budget. Did you see that Kit Harington was on Rich Eisen's show, and he was talking about a fan theory about how this whole thing is one of Ghost's dreams?
That's perfect.
It's
so they basically did Who Shot JR, except for the entire series.
Well, it's seen elsewhere. You know, it's a snow globe.
Oh yeah, you're right. So, I like it. I'm sold.
So after 15 minutes of Game of Thrones talk, we're not a Game of Thrones podcast, even though sometimes we are.
But this was a jam-packed episode. I can't even
there wasn't it. A ton of other news to talk about. So the other big news we have is Entertainment Weekly did their big... So Star Wars, every time there's a named edition of the saga, they end up doing a Vanity Fair kind of fluff piece with some pictures to get everybody excited, and then they do a bigger reveal, and this was with Entertainment Weekly. So Entertainment Weekly did a, I think it was like 7-part series of coverage. It's the cover of their fall movie preview, and so they have some really, they did like 7 articles about Star Wars The Last Jedi with a lot of big news. And so I broke it down into kind of 2 big chunks and then some quick hitters, but they spent a lot of time diving in on Luke and Rey. Before I go in, though, I do want to say this will probably be the last time we talk about Star Wars on the show before the movie comes out, because I am going to go on radio silence as a huge Star Wars fan. I do not want something spoiled for me like it was last time. So, with that being said, if you want more Star Wars from us, just listen to this episode for a couple more times over the next 3 months, and you'll get your fill. So... And this is actually on Mark Hamill and Rian Johnson's recommendation. Is they said, after this, do not look at any more Star Wars coverage. So I will respect their wishes. I'll watch the next trailer, because that'll be the story trailer, and then I'll be out. So we'll do the story trailer, and then we'll be done. So Luke and Rey on Octo. There was a line that stuck out to me. So we're talking about their relationship, and it starts with the quote from the author, the writer of this article, was that, you know, Luke Skywalker is the man, the myth, and the legend, and those two things are different.
Ooh.
The man and the myth are very different.
That's interesting.
So I was like, okay, all right, I'm in. And so it's you know, the quote that has been thrown around for the Force, not the Force Awakens, but the Last Jedi is, you know, you never want to meet your heroes. And they keep repeating that. You never want to meet your heroes. You never want to meet your heroes. And that is never more true with Rey, apparently, because she is used to, and it's weird for a character. They say that she's always used to being welcomed. It's weird for a character that's an orphan, that was orphaned on a planet to be welcomed. But if you think about it, like, she immediately fell in with Finn. She immediately fell in with Han and Chewie. She immediately fell in with Leia. And so she arrives on Octo, and Luke just says no. Like, Luke does not want anything to do with her. He does not give her the warm welcome. He came to Octo not to do anything noble, but to just be away. To be gone from everything, to not have to deal with it. The other thing, this was, I thought, something huge for them to put in an article, but the reason why he went to Octo to retreat is, and I quote, Luke thought Kylo was the chosen one. So...
You were supposed to be the chosen one!
Yeah, it'll probably... Let's be honest, that was probably one of the best delivered lines in the entire prequel trilogy of... It's... And it may be inflated because it's a few minutes after, Anakin, you're breaking my heart! which Natalie Portman can do so much better. Thanks, George. Thank you so much. Now, so he thought Kylo was the chosen one, and so his fall made him doubt his understanding and connection to the Force. And so that's big. And so he goes to kind of just retreat and become a hermit. So he wasn't like all the speculation of always going to learn how the Jedi should be and blah, blah, blah. No, he just wanted to get away. And so the other thing is, and it kind of probably reinforces his feelings on the Force, is that there are these nuns on the island. They're called the Caretakers, and they look like a fish, like a kind of a, like an upright bass almost. It's weird. It's like a bass penguin in a habit. It's really weird. Google it. the caretakers, and they're not happy that Luke is there. They basically have this begrudging tolerance of it. So it all kind of feeds into this, like, I don't understand the Force. The Force is not who I thought it was, which is crazy to think about after 3 decades of, like, Luke being the virtuous Jedi. And I mean, most of the analysis of the original trilogy, you know, in light of the prequels, is that, you know, Luke is what the Jedi Order should have been, like, more pragmatic, less ideological, more willing to do and make choices that may be morally dubious, but in the end, you know, serve the greater good. So with that in mind, Ray, Ray, by the way, R-E-Y and R-A-Y, love it. So with that in mind, you and I have talked week after week that we want this to be something different. So is that different enough for you from the usual Star Wars stuff? Is that going to be different enough to keep you interested?
Explain to me how that's different than Yoda.
Because Yoda was waiting intentionally for someone to come. He was waiting there for Luke.
Okay. That's my Bradley Whitford. Okay. I mean, like, I suppose. Like, let me say this. If this is used as, like, a conflict-building point to get us to some type of Rocky moment, then I will not be very happy about that. Okay? So, like, if this is used as, like, she finally convinces him that the Force is good, and then they train for a while, and then they beat up Drago, like, I'm not going to be particularly happy, right? But, if this is used as, like, a point to where, like, it changes the universe in some way, right? If they come to an understanding that there is no light and dark, right? That the gray is the way to go, or whatever, wherever we move, right? Then that would be much more interesting. But I do very much worry that what this comes down to in the end is that Rey convinces him that there's still hope. And then after she convinces him there's still hope, he sacrifices himself in some, you know, in some amazing courage way. And then that helps build her resolve and leads her to victory, just like every other terrible, terrible hero movie that we've ever seen. And I really think that that's where it's going. But I hope that I'm wrong about that. Is that fair?
That is fair. If it plays out how you think it's going to play out, I will also be very upset. But I don't think that's the way they're going to go, because you don't.
Hold on. What from what's happened in the first two of these of this reboot makes you think that that's not the way they will go?
It's not necessarily the movies, but everything else that Lucas is doing with the franchise makes me think that the gray area is where they're going to go with.
Okay, fair enough.
Everything that's happening on Rebels, everything that's happening in the EU novels, they're exploring more of the Imperial. They're showing, like, Lost Stars, if you haven't read that, or Preemptive Don't Sleep. It's basically Star Wars Romeo and Juliet, but less melodramatic. And they're showing, like, hey, these rebels aren't necessarily as good as they thought. And this Imperial girl that they follow, she's honestly a good person. And she thinks she's doing the wrong thing for the right reasons. It's really, really interesting. So I think
that's basically what Battlefront 2 will be exactly about, essentially, I would assume. Yeah.
Exactly. So everything they're doing with the franchise, you know, they've got Bendu on Rebels. I could talk about this for a long time. But everything they're doing with the franchise tells me that, like, the gray area is what they're going with, which I'm okay with. And I think that would be the way to go, because I don't think you do this weird thing where, you know, Luke goes off and he's a hermit for 3 decades and 5 minutes with Rey is going to change that. I don't think that's what it's going to be. I think he's going to realize that, you know what, I was wrong. It's okay to be wrong, and we're gonna do this in the right way. There's no the balance to the Force. I mean, in and of itself, like, balance is not light without dark. Balance is not dark without light. Balance is the middle. I think everything that they're doing, you know, imagery-wise and branding-wise, is very intentional with that. So I really think that's where they're going to go. I hope that's where they're going to go. So the other big chunk of this article was spent, honestly, it was kind of an article and a half, was about Finn, Rose, and Benicio del Toro's character, DJ, which, by the way, I hope that's not his actual character name and it's initials for something, or, you know, we'll just be fine with DJ. Benicio is a great actor, so it doesn't really matter what they call him.
Will he be riding around in rollerblades?
I would be okay with that.
That sounds like a video game character who fights in rollerblades.
DJ was a underpowered character in Street Fighter 4. He was terrible. Real terrible.
Was he on rollerblades?
He was not, but he was kind of hip-hoppy, so, you know, you get that merchandise.
We're getting there.
So Finn, this is really interesting. This is probably something that I really liked as well, was that they said that, you know, how Finn called himself the big deal in a big deal in the Resistance in The Force Awakens. Well, now he's become kind of a big deal in the Resistance based on his, but he still is disillusioned. He's like, I don't know if I want to be here.
Hold on. I have to say, I'm kind of a big deal. Like that's the only thing that I can think about. That line better be said at some point in time. Even if it's just a Will Ferrell cameo, he just walks behind him as he says it, flashing the Ron Burgundy mustache.
Kind of a big deal. No, so he's, you know, he's considered leaving the Resistance at this point. The lightsaber wound still burns constantly and hasn't really healed, so he's got that going on for him. And so he meets this girl, Rose, who's overshadowed by her much more popular, much more enigmatic sister, who's a pilot. She's just a wrench jockey. And Finn starts to see himself through her eyes, and he's like, okay, maybe I don't suck as much as I thought I did. So their whole story, they end up on the luxurious, the kind of Las Vegas of the Star Wars universe, Canto Bight. And they are there to recruit, capture, or otherwise Benicio del Toro's character, DJ, who is what in the Star Wars universe is called a slicer. So he's a hacker, he's a code breaker for some reason. They don't say why they're trying to get him. And he's not interested. He's only in it for the money. And so seeing Finn's character progression, seeing him, you know, kind of going through, it feels almost a little samey to me from The Force Awakens, but do you like where they're headed with one of the, honestly, more charismatic, you know, more screen-chewy actors that they have on their payroll? Do you like where they're going with Finn in this?
I don't know. So, like, shouldn't he, as a former stormtrooper, be uncomfortable with being the center of attention?
He should be,
so, like, yes. That makes sense, right? It makes sense. Mm-hmm. This whole, like, from what I read about this whole casino heist, Oceans, whatever. What are we going to call it?
Yeah.
Oceans, a Roman numeral 10. Oceans X.
Yeah.
So, like, this whole thing is weird. That, like, so, like, it seems like the main plot of this movie is going to be happening between Rey and Luke. But they have to find stuff for the other people to do, right? And so, like, they're just going to go on this gallivanting, like river cruise, and they're just going to, like, and they're just going to have themselves a good time, right? Like, does it seem a little bit, like, just time-filly, like, that's what we're doing?
Well, and, you know, I've said it before. I think it's a very Star Wars formula, where you've got three stories going on. You've got your light side Force users, so you've got, in this case, Rey and Luke, or in, you know, Empire, it's Luke and Yoda. You've got your dark side, so you've got, you know, Snoke and Kylo, who, by the way, his scar looks super gnarly. If you've seen the pictures, it looks pretty cool. So he's off with Hux, you know, training with Snoke, who, by the way, completely mocap, if you were curious about that, completely mocap. And then you've got your military rebellion resistance story. So this is like that third prong. So in, you know, Empire, it was Leia and Han on Cloud City. That was that third prong, you know. So it's a very Star Wars thing to have these three intertwining stories. And then they're honestly probably going to meet up at the end, like they always do in Star Wars, which at some point that's what Star Wars is. You've got these three diverging things and everybody's destiny brings them back together. So I don't necessarily know if it feels time filly, but it definitely feels formulaic. It really does. But there's nothing wrong with the formula if you do it well and you do it in a way that's unique, which is what we're looking for out of this, is uniqueness.
Yeah, like if they send them to this place like Cloud City or maybe a casino, and then they and then they meet this old friend that they haven't known before, but maybe he's working for the other side, right? but then they get captured and the old friend feels bad about it, right? And so then in the next movie, he helps them. Like, maybe if something like that would happen, right?
Now, if he ends up wearing Finn's coat, then I'll say we're repeating it. Because why was Lando wearing Han's coat at the end of Empire Strikes Back?
Because he's Billy D.
Oh my gosh! So there was a lot of reveals, which makes me think that if they're revealing this much in an Entertainment Weekly cover story, then there's going to be a lot more to be revealed in this film. You know, they say that they're going to reveal Rey's parentage is going to be very tied into her journey in this film. They have also said that you're probably not going to find out who Snoke is in backstory. You'll find out his plan, but his backstory is still going to remain murky, which I'm okay with. Like, I don't need Snoke's backstory. Like, I really don't. Yeah. I
would like it
eventually, but I don't. It's not gonna hamper my enjoyment of this film anymore. I don't think to say, I still don't know who Snoke is. That's not the concern for me. I'm more concerned with Kylo's journey and Rey's journey and that whole deal. And then maybe they give me a set of prequels that explains his backstory. No, I'm just.
Can I ask you a question about this?
Absolutely.
Why do they feel the need to do this stuff?
When you say this stuff, the Entertainment Weekly stuff?
Any promotion whatsoever. Like, save the money. You know what's going to happen with the date? I don't even know what date opens. You probably have it in your calendar. You know what's going to happen?
Not yet, no.
You know what's going to happen the day it opens? 1 billion people are going to go and see it. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Like, why are you doing this? Save your money, Disney. Like, you don't need... Spend it on whatever terrible The Nut Job 3 or whatever terrible animated movie that you're going to put out next. What was that?
That was DreamWorks.
Whatever terrible Toy Story 7 that you're going to put out. Save it, and just spend it on that, because 1 billion people are going to see this on opening night. You drop it like a Beyonce album and it doesn't matter. Everybody will go and see it. Like, it's so ridiculous.
I do think you're onto something, that at some point we're going to reach a Star Wars fatigue. You know, we went for, almost a decade and a half without anything. You know, we got some video games. It wasn't in the pop culture lexicon. I get why they did it for The Force Awakens. Like, I get it. Like, it was, like, you're continuing that buzz. But at this point, you don't need it. But then again, you and I do run in very... very nerdy circles. So everybody that we know is very aware of Star Wars, but maybe not ever. Maybe there's somebody out there who's not as aware of Star Wars.
1 billion people will see this.
People or $1 billion worth of people?
They will definitely make $1 billion.
Show it in 3D once, you'll make $1 billion.
1 billion people are going to see this movie. It's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. So, guys, that brings us to everybody's favorite part of the show, your favorite segment, my favorite segment, your grandmother's favorite segment. Don't sleep on it. So, Ray, what can the good folks not sleep on this week?
So, actually, today, and this movie's kind of old, I hadn't had a chance to see it, but on Tuesday, the day we record, I went and saw Detroit, which is the new Catherine Bigelow movie, of, you know, Zero Dark Thirty, The Hurt Locker, etc. Point Break, obviously. She, you know, she's fantastic. And this is a movie about a specific incident that happened during the riots in Detroit at the Algiers Hotel in 1967. And this movie has gotten some criticism, which, after watching it, I believe is warranted. Aside from perhaps one character, Algie Smith's character, the long-lasting effects of this event really weren't seen. And the long-lasting effects of just systematic racism really weren't seen. And I think that was a missed opportunity, right? Mm. The treatment of black women as essentially scenery, especially in the aftermath of what happens. Because there's a long part of this movie that's after the hotel, and they're still treated like scenery. That's a problem. That was a big problem. And a lot of the emotions outside of what happened in the hotel were surface deep. Like, it really was. There really was a perspective problem in this movie, and I would fully admit that. But what happened in the hotel, which is where half the movie probably happens, what happened in that hotel was just Bigelow at her finest, okay? Like, if think about Hurt Locker, think about Zero Dark, think about what you're talking about. Just gripping, visceral, painful scenes that are just full of tension. She builds tension as well as anybody, as well as any director. it really made you feel like you were experiencing the situation with characters. And the fact that it was this subject matter of police brutality against people of color, in the world that we live in right now and the situations that we're going through right now, it hit home with me. And I said, I tweeted this out, I understand the problems with this movie, but I don't think I've ever left a movie more upset than when I left this movie. Upset that things haven't really changed that much, upset that I don't know what to do about it, upset that as a white male with my privilege, I will never truly know what it's like to be a black person in this world, and I can't truly empathize. That knowledge, all of that, just is so desperately upsetting. And then you watch what these characters went through and know that people are still going through it today. I think it's such an important movie. I think that it was really well done. And aside that hotel scene was really well done, this other stuff aside from it. And I think that you should get past those other things and watch this movie, because I really do think that it was a gut punch, but the best kind of gut punch, if that makes sense.
Kind of an awakening gut punch.
Yeah.
That's good. It's on my list, you know, with the sitter situation with the
sure.
6 month old asleep in the next room. It's one of those that honestly, unfortunately, I'm gonna have to wait till it's probably hitting on a Redbox or on demand, but it'll be seen for sure.
And I'm gonna tell you, it's a tough watch. It's not it's not enjoyable. It is not uplifting.
You're telling me that the director who gave me a 12-minute bomb defusal in Iraq is gonna give me a tough watch? I'm flabbergasted that Catherine Bigelow.
I'm gonna tell you that the scenes in the hotel were on par with what was going on in the Hurt Locker in terms of tension.
Wow.
And just the way it makes you
feel. That is one of my favorite directed films of all time. Like just so good.
The problem is that she can't leave that behind after the hotel, and that's a. That's a problem.
So in a much different tone, my Don't Sleep this week.
Sorry for bringing things down. It was so good. I had to talk about good
films leave you different than when you went in. So my Don't Sleep this week, it requires a little setup. So The Guardian announced today that David Tennant and Michael Sheen are to star in a limited series that is an adaptation of Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman's Good Omens. And so if you haven't heard of Good Omens, it is a fantasy novel from, you know, the early 90s about an angel and a demon who set out to stop the apocalypse. And they don't do it for any altruistic reasons. They do it because they're kind of comfortable and don't want the world to end. And so you've got David Tennant playing Crawley, which there's a really funny story about why his name is Crawley. He was the snake in the Garden of Eden, and so when he had to start crawling, they changed his name to Crawley. So you've got David Tennant playing this kind of smooth and snarky, demon Crawley who I was sold on this book when I read the character description of Crawley, where it said he didn't fall, he sauntered vaguely downward, which I was like, okay, I'm sold, I'm dead. And then you've got Michael Sheen playing Aziraphale is the character, and so he's the angel, and so it's just a really funny comedy of errors. There's this whole comedy of errors about there's a cult and the spawn of Satan is gonna be born and trigger this whole thing, and so they're trying to get the right baby with the right parents, and it's just this whole comedy of errors happens, and there's this shell game and just a bumbling nurse who happens to be trying to smooth things along puts the wrong baby with the wrong parents, and so the politician that's supposed to raise the spawn of Satan ends up raising just a regular kid, and so they're thinking that this regular kid is going to be, and so it's just this random kid in the British countryside named Adam that ends up being the Antichrist, and it's just really, really funny. And so it's, again, it's a funny read. It's very, very snarky. It's got some interesting commentary on the nature of evil, which is good. There's a conversation early on in the book between Crawley and some of his some of his demonic counterparts, where they're discussing what they've done to sway mankind. And you know, one is like, I made this man doubt his faith, and one, you know, in 10 years he'll have lost his faith. And one is like, I made this woman doubt her marriage, and in 5 years she will leave her husband. And Crawley, this modern guy, he's like, I made the entire phone system crash for 5 hours, and thousands of people were mean to their secretaries. And so what's the greater evil? Like, what is the greater evil? So it's just this whole funny discussion. So if you haven't read it, it's a funny read. It's Good Omens. You can get it from your local library. I'm listening to the audiobook. It's got a charming British narrator, because it's Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. So it's all, you know, British and very, very fun. So if you like British humor, it's very dry British humor. So if that's your deal, check it out. Good Omens. You can get it on the Overdrive app. If you're a library person, go to the library. Check it out on Amazon. It's probably like $5. So, and then when it comes out on BBC, it'll be like a 6-episode miniseries. So it'll be pretty fun. So Good Omens, don't sleep on it. But guys, that's the show for this week. So if you like what you heard, again, leave us a rating or review on iTunes. It'd really help with visibility. It'd be a mitzvah to us, really, if you did that. You know, share it with a friend, wherever you find the podcast, whether it's on iTunes, whether it's on the website, whether it's on Stitcher, share it with a friend. Send us an email, twowokenerdspod@gmail.com. Ray, where can the good folks find you on the interwebs?
At RM Summerlin on the Twitter.
Seen a lot of fantasy football from Ray right about now, which I don't necessarily mind. You can find me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at Two Woke Nerds. And until next time, guys, stay woke.
Stay woke.